Rudy Edmonds has been at Holden most of the years since it started. His discipline is geology. He was at one time vice president for operations and director of research for Sohio Oil Company. He's on the faculty at Rock Island at Augustana, and dean of faculty or vice president at California Lutheran. He's still on the faculty at California Lutheran. On my immediate left is Dave Larson. He's the one that keeps the scientists honest on the Science and Technology Committee. As a CPA, he's a financial consultant, an entrepreneur, and a great friend of the village, and our economist and accountant. And on his left is Bill Matheson, who is the president of his own consultant company, is a nuclear physicist and engineer, and also at one time has been with a number of firms. He was with Douglas Nuclear. And Werner Jansen has just come in. He's a business manager and has been for most of the life of Holden Village. He's an aeronautical engineer prior to coming here. And Larry Collins is on his right. Larry Collins is a geologist by discipline. He's at California State University at San Fernando. I got it right this time, huh? Okay, and a great friend of Holden, and he's living proof we don't operate just with Lutherans. He's the Methodist contingent.
Sinner among saints.
He usually says it the other way.
Yeah.
In addition to these, Reverend Earl Anderson is the theologian on the committee. He's made a great contribution to us on a publication he presented. Dr. Laverne Rieke is ex officio. He's also president of the board. Mrs. Marion Jacobson is a nutritionist, a well-known nutritionist, retired from faculty of an eminent university of the West, Washington State University. Dr. Al Hoverson is a soil scientist, which is very valuable to us. His plot is out front here. He's growing all these pretty flowers in tailings that have been, he made a recipe of tailings and a few other things, and you see it's growing flowers. He was also on the Governor's Council on Energy. Ray Scrindy is a consultant. Ray to the committee hasn't been here yet. He's a hydraulic engineer, civil engineer. Dean Carl Hall was a consultant. He's an internationally known engineer, a dean of engineering at Washington State University. This keeps coming up here somehow. Al Halverson is also from Washington State University. And Dr. Dorn is a contributor to the committee. He has not been here with our meeting yet. He is an engineer and authority on energy. Dr. Roger McClellan is internationally known in the field of inhalation toxicology, bioenvironmental impact of energy utilization. He is vice president for Loveless Foundation and director of the inhalation laboratory there. The largest and probably the best inhalation laboratory in the world. We also consult other people, so we do have a substantial group of contributors to this committee.
You need to introduce yourself.
I'm Leo Busted. I'm a sheep herder.
Where?
Washington State University.
Dean of the School of Veterinary Medicine.
Formerly, I was with the University of California. We then are directed by the board to counsel them, to advise them on matters that are scientific and technological relative to this village. And they call on us then for various to address various issues of consequence to them. We may only gather data for them and present it to them, but is it often with recommendations, which they usually request? We will get some examples of this later. We are in meetings often. Wherever two or three are gathered, we have a meeting. We really are very scriptural. We have had many meetings, and our science committee continually operates by telephone calls, by letters, and we have several meetings a year. We started out just 2 years ago this August. We started out with Congressman McCormick and his wife coming here. He is sort of Mr. Energy in Congress. He is also the congressman that represents this district. He and I worked together many years ago at Hanford Laboratories for General Electric Company. He is one of the few scientists in Congress today, and he was chairman, the youngest chairman of an important subcommittee, and I think a position which he still occupies. He will be here tomorrow. He and his wife will be here Wednesday afternoon, Thursday and Friday, and hopefully he will give us an energy uptake. Update. Energy update. That's when we started, and then we've had several meetings since then. And every time we meet here, we always inform, and that's part of our direction, that we inform the people here, because we are a committee to serve you, and then we also present issues that face us and call for help. And we have received many suggestions, much offer of help, and that has been most useful, and I'll give some examples of that here tonight as we progress. Now, what we're doing tonight, and it was announced as the decision process, and one of the reasons for this is that as a science and technological committee, we do represent somewhat of a threat. We are very enthusiastic about what we do, and it's not unexpected. That many people, because we do come on strong, many people say, well, science and technology is running Holden. They're the ones that are making the decisions on the program, and everything's up to them. I am here to tell you that is not our intention. We're all people of goodwill, hopefully. I know the other members are, and I try to be. And we are here to serve them, to report to you as the constituency, and formally to the board, to advise them on matters of import. Now, I'll have more to say about the charter later. But at our last meeting, because of this concern and the expressed concern of some of the membership, we thought, and at Dave Larson's suggestion, we should have a brief discussion on the decision-making process. In our committee, when anyone makes a suggestion, they are nominated by acclamation to do just what they suggest. And it doesn't seem to keep us from making suggestions. And Dave Larson and many of us, of course, are involved in decisions every day that impact on many lives and involves very substantial amounts of money. We thought it might be appropriate then for Dave to lead off tonight for about 10 minutes now on how he looks and how we have discussed decision-making process, but also now how he looks at it. We run a kind of a committee that you can interrupt at any time. It doesn't seem to affect the agenda materially, because that's how our agendas go. So we are here to not only give information but also gain it. With that, Dave, the floor is yours, and so is the balcony.
Okay. First of all, to express my appreciation to Leo, I got in this noon, and he didn't put me on until 9 o'clock this evening.
But you were in a meeting at 2.
Yes. As long as the topic of decision-making was announced, I suppose I ought to spend the 10 minutes talking about that subject. And I'll talk about the process a little bit, and then decision-making for organizations, and then turn it back to Leo and others for discussion on the decision-making here at Holden and particularly in our committee. Now, pretty elementary definition of decision making, that it involves gathering pertinent facts, coming to a conclusion, and then setting a course of action that affects future events. Now, these events may be varying lengths of time. For example, planning the menu for today's meals, or planning a two-week vacation, or a little longer into the future, deciding what college you want to attend this next year. The skill in decision-making comes into play because you're never working with complete facts. You just simply don't have time to gather all the information about a subject before you have to act on it. And then, because we cannot know exactly what's going to happen in the future. Okay, because of these two points, you're working with incomplete facts and you don't know exactly what's happening in the future, you have to think of decision making in terms of relatively good decisions versus relatively poor decisions. If you start thinking in terms of right and wrong decisions, ultimately you're going to end up in a complete state of frustrated inactivity. I've heard a definition of a successful decision maker as one who can quickly recognize his mistakes and then correct them. Now, it takes a pretty mature individual to do this, particularly if you're working for somebody else. Too often, people become terribly defensive about their decisions and waste great quantities of energy and resources trying to prove themselves right. And I think you all recognize how that probably happens. I've got some conclusions of my own about decision making. First of all, decision making is an acquired skill. And secondly, some people have more aptitude for it than others. Arthur Rubinstein has a great aptitude for the piano, but even he has to practice many hours a day in order to maintain his skills. Okay, I have also observed that really inspired decisions seem to come from people acting alone. Now, this leads to the question, are groups of people capable of making relatively good decisions? You've heard the definition of a camel as a horse designed by a committee. Well, not too far off, perhaps. Just as an observation, policy decisions of public organizations are almost always the responsibility of a group of people, such as a board of directors, regents, trustees, council, legislators, and so on. And the thinking here seems to be that when you're charged with the stewardship of other people's resources, such as we are here at Holden Village, that several heads are better than one. Now, I think that this can be true, but to make it happen, the particular group involved must sit down and outline a program which includes how they are going to make relatively good decisions. Now, it's my opinion that here at Holden, we work in such a framework. But it's particularly difficult for churches and church-related organizations to outline a framework for making relatively good decisions. And I think some of the reasons for this include the following. One reason the church organizations frequently have vaguely stated goals and policies such as to serve the Lord. And I think that really needs to be expanded to include how we're going to serve the Lord. Another thing that happens is that a program gets started by a church organization and it is not regularly reviewed. That the programs tend to become inflexible. I'm going to use some examples of boards that I've served on, and I take the blame as much as anybody. But in the Seattle area, for example, Lutheran Family and Child Service, Catholic organization, Jewish organization, and Salvation Army all were running maternity homes. And they ran them long past the time when there was any social need in the community for maternity homes, and finally the United Way told them they'd cut off their funding because there just wasn't any longer any need. And all this time the boards failed to recognize that there no longer was a social need in the community for this, and you had all kinds of guilds of women still knitting booties for these children that simply weren't on the scene. Okay, it was an inflexible program. What they should have been asking, obviously, was how can this our social branch of the church be serving the social needs of the community, rather than this tunnel vision of saying we are going to operate a maternity home. Okay, another problem that the church organizations have is that, and I think you'll recognize it, people are often chosen for their willingness to serve rather than their particular expertise. That the people who are probably the most knowledgeable in the areas and have the most experience in the areas they want are also the busiest people around. So that almost by default, a lot of boards are made up by available people rather than skilled people. Another thing church organizations tend to do is to be very democratic in their voting processes. And this can lead to considerable inefficiencies and very diluted decisions as contrasted with the inspired decisions that I mentioned earlier. And you know, sometimes a benevolent dictatorship is a lot more efficient than this completely democratic voting system that we tend to have in church organizations. In all organizations, the boards involved must rely on staff and other experts for a considerable quantity of the facts that they use to make a decision. In church organizations, you sometimes have the staff there for all the for the wrong reasons. When I was president of the Lutheran Family and Child Service, I had a terrible problem with one person who every Monday morning at the staff meetings would thank the Lord for having called him to be a social worker. And I had a very devil of time firing that person for incompetence. You know, you keep wondering, are you going contrary to the Holy Spirit or something? I think that's a problem that church organizations probably face uniquely. Another problem that I see with the church organizations is that you have self-perpetuating boards in very many of them, and you tend to perpetuate your own image. The nominating committees tend to nominate people of similar views, and I think you lack the input necessary for a reflection of the community that you serve. You maybe don't use this term in church organizations, but I've heard it referred to as corporate incest, and that's probably pretty accurate. I must observe also that some of the self-perpetuation is being done by the preachers. We're tending to get away from that a little bit more in the church colleges and others now. I mentioned that, and I have to repeat this, that I was using examples from my own experience, and because of that I certainly accept the blame for some of the unfortunate decisions that were made on some of those boards, and hopefully that won't be repeated at Holden Village.
All right. Any questions for Dave? Suggestions, comments, or suggestions to us? Any of the members of the committee want to make any statements?
I have a question. David,
yes.
You feel that self-perpetuating boards should not exist?
No. I think that they should have definitions of or limitations from certain areas. I think probably we'll mention the Holden Board later on, but you've got synodical representation. You have certain groups such as the youth being represented and so on. And that I think is long as those constituencies are represented on the boards, that there's nothing wrong with it per se. It's when a particular group within that becomes dominant that you run into the tunnel vision.
Would you classify the Holden Board as somewhat self-perpetuating?
Oh, absolutely.
I thought thought so.
I heard,
ladies. If you'd mind reintroducing the board, I mean, the panel, since some of the people have come in late.
Oh, yes. Yes. Larry Collins, Werner Jansen, Rudy Edmonds, Umdi of Houston, and this is Dave Larson, and Bill Matheson. I remember back some years ago, we were joking about decision-making, and somebody asked us how we make the decision on our family. And you've heard others say a similar thing, but I always told them I made the big decisions, so my wife made the little decisions. They asked me what I meant by that. Well, I call her the chief, and she decides, when we move into another house, buy cars, or where the children go to school. And I help decide whether we should accept Red China into the UN, how we use the space shuttle system, and whether we should fire Kanakin and M. Chitka. But in the science committee, we are involved in big and small decisions. And some of the ground rules that were established go something like this. Holden Village should, and relative to the bishop's question here, Holden Village should be perpetuated for the foreseeable future. That's premise number one. And within that context, we assume a renewal of the Forest Service use permit, because we operate here under use permit from the Forest Service. We own the buildings, but not the ground on which they stand. That's almost without exception, isn't it? At least at this location. We do own buildings and land at 25 Mile Creek, which will become evident here in a short time. The location of Holden Village is not absolutely not an absolute necessity for its continued existence. And other locations may be used as extensions of Holden Village. And then number two is fire risk must be avoided. Three, Railroad Creek cannot be polluted by Holden Village activities. Four, capital improvements should be on our own property whenever possible. We own, a couple hundred acres, Werner? Up where the mining claims are, and it extends across the river towards the miners' village up by what we used to call the horse corral. Holden Village is operated on a labor-intensive rather than a capital-intensive basis. That's why you see us washing pots and pans and things like that. Holden Village labor is unskilled and has frequent turnover. Alternatives to fossil fuels must be developed. And because they are non-renewable, are being depleted at a rapid rate, and as the supply decreases, the relative cost will increase. And there's another, of course, very important consideration. This we addressed last time, as some of us are in the energy business or related to it. And the best study in recent times, probably, was by Wilson and his group at MIT, when they looked at the supplies up to the year 2000 and reached the conclusion that we as a country will be in serious trouble on hydrocarbon fuels, the gas and oil, by the year 1985, maybe as early as 1983, but it may be far more acute than that, depending on the situation in the Middle East. Right now it's, of course, for those of you who read the paper or believe part of it, you know that it is not all sweetness and light, and if war could definitely come, and if it comes, the supply of oil may be, of course, cut. At the present time, we're importing 50% of our oil, so that weighs very heavily upon us here, and we are not prepared really for that emergency. We are gauging up for the 1983-1985 time frame. Now, some other premises. Balanced diets are necessary for healthful nutrition. That's why we have nutritionists also in our committee and are very concerned in that area. Now, we then rate various problems according to priority. The first priority are issues that will that we must handle and handle properly because they may jeopardize the continued operation of the village. What are some of these things? Disposition of solid waste, and they could close us down for that. Sewage treatment, they could also close us down for that. Pollution problems involving the tailings, and the fuel supply for transportation from the holding dock to the village, and then, of course, the operation of the village, because we do rely on considerable hydrocarbon fuel here. In another category, those that are desirable, those issues that are desirable from the standpoint of good stewardship, this relates to energy conservation, and we are very much involved in that. In forest utilization, and we have access to some of that, in land use here and in the 25-mile creek area, mine utilization, recycling of products, food production, food source and food storage. And then we also have an educational component within our committee, and it has to do with educational models. Our water wheel is an example of that. We don't have any delusions that it will supply all the power we need in Holden Village. It will light a few bulbs up in the Peace Park. And it's a fun thing. And it's fun to have Herman Propp here. And he, unfortunately, he isn't here now. But we think this is a great project. And we're going to have a lot of fun and education with it as we establish it in the Peace Park area. We are looking at solar energy. What is the impact of this? Part of that's educational. Part of it is also practical. When Lodge 2, for example, was redone, it was piped so that we can utilize some solar panels to heat some of that. And we will be heating the river sauna. We'll be looking at it as helping on the jacuzzi. We had a student here on a scholarship this summer. He will be back to complete his report in September. We also have a wind power. We're looking at the possibilities there. And fish culture. Some of you are involved in this. Meredith Olson, is she here? Did she come back?
She came back tonight, but I don't think she's at the
meeting. And we also have a lad here from University of Washington. It's
Dave
Coleman. Coleman. Is he here? And you'll all be interested in seeing what that's about. Now, we are serious about that, not only as an educational project, but as also a potential for a food source. So this is sort of how we look at it. And then I thought, now it might be useful just to go over some of the things we've done, some of the decisions that were made. Some decisions are and the recommendations are acted upon fast. Some of them we discard, and some of them are easily made, and some are very complex. And just a couple of instances of these. For example, we are also involved in the safety and fire aspects. So we have a subcommittee on that. Let's have one on transportation, looking at, you know, how do you get to Holden? How do you get from Wenatchee to Chelan to 25 Mile Creek and in that area? In relative to transportation and parking, we have a lot of people that were really really shook up this past year. They hesitated to park their car in the Holden lot on top of the hill above 25 Mile Creek. They're really concerned about it because they were getting ripped off. I got ripped off there, and other people did, and they had their windshields busted out, and so the advice was park on a hill. Well, so our advice in our meeting here in June was we got to do something about that. So we recommended that you put a trailer up there and have the person that helps on the boat, he lives in the trailer, and so you cut all this out. Well, we did. I guess the board acted on immediately. You had a trailer there within a week, and everything has gone well. And now the word is to park in the lot and not on the hill, because when they were fighting the fire up there around 25 Mile Creek, the Forest Service was carrying around these helicopters. They were dipping in, getting 1,000 pounds of water, and one of them sort of slipped and landed on the VW Rabbit parked on the hill, and it reduced it to about the size of a rabbit. I hated to hear that, because I got a VW Rabbit parked on the hill right now. So that's a rapid action thing. Another one, the decision was easy to make, was we looked at the heat exchange thing. Al Hoverson originally in our committee said we got to look at heat exchange. We dump a lot of hot water out, and we take cold water in out of the Copper Creek, which comes in at about 45 degrees, and so we heat that up to temperature. Why not use some of the waste heat on the heat exchange to fix it up? And that was the reason the suggestion. Well, but we kind of shelved it, and Tom Gilbertson from down California came, and Werner and Tom were walking around, and Tom said, you know, heat exchanger here would be really ideal. And with that was an easy decision because it cost hardly anything to do it. A little labor, and we had it going. So now the water, instead of coming in to be heated at 45 degrees, comes in at 110 using this simple heat exchanger. So you're only heating from 110. And our, for those of you on the dishwashing crew, I know it'll be easy for you to believe this, that dishwasher is running about 6 hours a day right now. So that's a great thing. And Don, or rather Tom Gilbertson, met with us today. And he's there. Hold up your hand, Tom. You see, this is what happens. People come here, and now he met with our committee today, looking at some other possibilities on one of the products of their company. Well, you can as he studied this situation, he says, "Well, look at you got these generators up here, but maybe they're only operating half the time. You're running a lot of water through. You could be doing something with that. And one of the things you can be doing with it is to get a large pressure tank, pump water into it, have a heel element in it, heat it up to 285 degrees, and then you've got stored power in there, really, that you could heat a lot of things. So we are looking at that now. And you also may have some, a couple of, one or two good heat exchangers that we may end up with from his company. So these are the kind of things that happen in this kind of meeting tonight, and with the talent that walks through or comes up the trail. So these are the kind of things that are fun. At our meeting 2 years ago, Congressman McCormick suggested various possibilities. And one of the suggestions that we discussed at that time was to use, with all this forest products, to go to using all this material and all the waste and everything, and going to a steam generation. Maybe even to get some government money on a micro community as a model for this. We investigated this, and we said no, on the basis of all the labor it would take to accumulate the wood pile from here to the top of the tailings to run the steam generator for the winter, plus the training that you need to run high pressure vessels. So we shelved that one. The mine opening, we were hot. We really got charged up on opening of the mine for a lot of reasons. Not only educational, but maybe as a source of heat, since the temperature inside the mine probably never got below 50, 55 degrees. If you've ever been up here in the winter, it does get below that. And so maybe you could utilize that. If it only gets below that, maybe you can grow mushrooms in there. We can maybe park a lot of our tin cans and other things that we'll be digging up here in about 20 years to re-salvage. We could have it handy in there so when we need them. Our lumber, so it'd be storage. And so it had a lot of things going for it, see? And so we had a study made. And for safety and cost and other reasons. That's another thing that we did not recommend to the board. We shelved it for now. And then we circulated that among the board, and we got their considered opinion, and we says, not for now. Now, we may ask some of the miners. It's an exciting thing that's going to happen on Saturday. 225 people who had some association, their parents had association with this mine when it was in operation, will be coming up to spend the day here. It's a real first. And then the numbers kept coming up. They finally cut it off at 225. But we're fixing up now a questionnaire for these people of questions we'd like answered. Some of them do impact on the Science Technology Committee. Or anything else. So we look forward to that. So these are a few of the decisions that that we face. Now I can take you through and then the committee will comment as we proceed through this. We do have a problem as far as the source of power goes, because we have to turn to hydrocarbon fuel. How do we reduce that? Our hydropower comes from Copper Creek Basin. That water power is reduced in the fall, maybe as early as August this year, in September. And that's critical, because where do you get the power then, you see? We've looked through the years at many alternatives. 10 Mile Creek. And they said, no, you better look at look at Railroad Creek. A lot of our decisions are made for us from outside. The Forest Service makes some of the decisions for us. Or EPA, so many of the regulatory agencies make our decisions. So what we're looking at now, one of the possibilities, because we have to look at these tailings, because they are a source of contamination and problem, but they're also to an extent our salvation, because we utilize it now for disposal of our solid waste and also for our sewage plant as some of the effluent from that. We're also interested in reclaiming them. We had a big study going on this. This will be a problem that we will discuss with Congressman McCormick during his time here. And when you're talking about how it should be done and the cost of it, this is part of our responsibilities, and we contract for a study on it. Now you're talking, you know, big money, in excess of a million, to really do it right. One of the possibilities we looked at for hydropower was to go up at the entrance to the wilderness area, put in a diversion dam, run a canal down to the top of the tailings, number two, they're the big ones. Have a retention basin there, and have a horse track around it and a pond in the middle, have sailboat races, and then you use the water power with a 90-foot drop to a hydroelectric plant. Up to 500 kW. Now you're talking a lot of money there. Several hundreds of thousands of dollars. Not counting the labor. So you say, can we do that? Well, we don't know whether we can do it. A lot of that depends on the commitment of funds, but before that, whether the Forest Service will buy it. But it'd be one form of reclaiming those tailings too, you see. So we do look then at alternatives. The mine portal reopening, I've already addressed that. We essentially table that and so inform the board. We're interested in storage space. In this regard, we try to do now prospective studies rather than just be mopping up or answering issues as they come up. You're always running after fires. What we try to do is do some prospective studies. As some of you know, the village owns land at 25 Mile Creek. They own 5.5 acres up on top of the hill where you park your car and where there's a fruit orchard. And then they have 1.7 acres just above, well, it starts from the dock, goes up the hill to the house, and then there's some land on top. And Marlon Gabbert, a friend of the village from Seattle, and a friend of Werner's, made this study of what is the proper land use of this. What are the possibilities? What if we go to, say, an open university or some kind of a meeting place in that area? What are these possibilities for storage and these kind of possibilities? And they suggested phase one and phase two. It was a very, very good study. And then it's been an extension of it, because he brings in all the possibilities, and some of these decisions then become easier or harder. Since he gave his original report, he says, we got a problem. If we were going to build a lodge, a multiple housing facility up where that house is, just above our our dock, you got a real problem on fire and safety under the present regulations. You'd have to put in large storage facilities. And so that changes the ball game, see, of what you can do. So it's better to know that before you get into trouble. So this study has been very useful to us. We look at agricultural production. What can we do? As you know, the corn you ate today, this is the best kind of agricultural production, is to encourage friends of the village to call us up when they got something for us, and then we go and get it. That happened to the corn, you see, and it happens to quite a few things. All of the wheat, the fine bread that you eat here, a lot of it comes from wheat that is given to us and that we grind here by a mill. Did we buy the mill or did somebody give it to us?
It was given.
You enjoy the electricity here because many, many years ago, a congregation in Toledo, Ohio, most members of which couldn't even spell Holden, probably, let alone know where it was. Holden to them was something like Pullman, where I come from. It isn't the end of the world, but you can see it from there. and that's how it was to them, you see. Well, what did they do? They came through what? With $4,000 or $5,000. It launched us on establishing a power plant. Then somebody came through with a couple of generators, hauled them up here. And somebody happened to know how to make them operate, so we had them rebuilt. And we have an electrical generating plant that we put in there, diversion dam, with an expenditure, laying the pipe and everything. I mean, we have, what, a 14-inch pipe, isn't it? Yeah. On up to diversion dam. You should all go up there. It's a remarkable project. Hardly any, mostly unskilled labor that did it. Kids and everybody else was into the act. We had investment of about $38,000 or $39,000 in there. Now, if you ask an engineer, and we have, what you'd bid on that plant today, and they wouldn't do it for $250,000. That's probably in excess of $300,000 to put it in. So we do operate on faith in the goodness of many congregations and many people. We also reported on our student research projects and the solar projects that we've already discussed, and the water wheel. And we had the reports, of course, on these various subcommittees that I've already mentioned. And we also discussed the heat storage project that we've already mentioned to you and that Tom Gilbert was involved in. And then an issue that came up was the Lucerne property. As I've already mentioned, we do have property at 25 Mile Creek. I think it's well. Bill, you ought to. You've just been through the report, the long-term plans made back in 1962, and also you were looking at the logistics here, as you expressed today. I think yeah. You should say a few words on
it. I guess it's dated September 64. Was that when the first plan was completed? It was projected to be a 10-12 year plan for Holden. And it's Werner lent it to me last month when I was here. So I read it through, and while, of course, what we see at Holden today isn't identical to what was projected here, the plan was clearly stated. The person who did the plan had done plans before and knew the plans are not always implemented exactly. But it was remarkable to me how much forethought was shown in this plan, and many of the things that have come about 10 years later, a little more than that, a dozen years later, were thought of before. And in this point that Leo's talking about, I was struck with the fact that right at that time, they foresaw that to maintain a village up here and to maintain the ministry and what they were trying to do, seeing it was deep in the mountains, that it would have to be logistically supported. And they foresaw the 25 Mile Creek necessity, and also was stated here that sometime down the line, if the village grows as projected, even though they had hoped then to hold a lid on 250 registrations, as a maximum, that Lucerne would probably be have to be utilized in some way or other.
Now, what is the Science and Technology Committee relative to Lucerne? As some of you know, it has been offered, it was offered formally to the village as a gift. And our charge then from the board is to say, all right, what is your input into this from the science and technology standpoint? And how we then look at it, and we have been down there several, many of us have been down there several times. We had Erling Soley, an engineer who's a consultant on our hydroelectric plant. We looked over the diversion dam, the hydroelectric plant, the water system, the fire and safety system, the sewage system, the soil and the plot land, and some of us stayed overnight in the buildings and looked over the buildings, and we did a lot of discussing. Pardon?
That was real dedication.
Yeah. We look at the possibilities of soil in that area for growth, what is the climate there compared with here, and of course it's very different. A lot more potential there for solar power, if we want to go to that. And you have hydroelectric power from Railroad Creek is contrasted from the Copper Creek Basin. We looked at the potential source of groundwater for a water system. We look at the docking facilities, the availability of winter heat from water in Lake Chelan, and we're going to get more on the temperature data of Lake Chelan. The report we have, it doesn't really get below 50 degrees, but we have to verify that, and that of course offers great potential. When you look at the climate there versus here, we also look at the disposal of liquid and solid waste. That could be a potential problem. We have to define that to evaluate the buildings and what would have to be, if, depending on what kind of program you're going to have there, and what the Forest Service would expect from this. So these are the kind of inputs and studies that we make to submit on which the board makes the decision. We're just one of the decision or one of the information sources for the board. Another thing that happens in this, here in the village, the director, Dr. Fritz Norsted, has, I understand, has had meetings now, a couple of meetings. We'll have more meetings from the community here, various people feeding in, you know, what does this say to you? What kind of, what are your suggestions? So many, many exciting proposals come up, and as these proposals are manifest, some of it raises more issues for the science committee. One of the things, of course, we're interested in is food production. It does offer some potential there. We're interested in fish, pen rearing of fish, or establishing of peninsulas. Maybe even looking at the possibility of peninsula on growth and also subsurface and promoting then the fish system. I have consulted, I'm involved in a study for this region, something that our governor is very interested in, having to do with aquatic farming. And because in the Northwest, of course, we have a lot of water and a lot of impounded water and a lot of shoreline that can be utilized if you use the technology that's already known in many, many other countries for production food. And we'd look at it there, possibly as it could well be a model. Among the suggestions made have to do with what this can be then if one builds there anything. One can have, for example, a camping area, private camping area, where people could come and camp. You could have maybe a learning center, not only to give them sort of a window into what's going on at Holden, but also in the conservation. One of the things we look at in a positive way here at Holden is a different lifestyle, a change in lifestyle, which we as a nation must face in the very near future, realistically. and it then could represent a model for this kind of a thing. And we could look at a number of possibilities, and we, as a science committee, will tell you some idea of feasibility from the science technology standpoint. Yes, sir.
What land and buildings are involved in the process or the program down there?
At Lucerne right now?
How much land?
8.4 acres.
And it involves a power plant, a diversion dam, a schoolhouse, and quite a number of buildings that are probably the best utilization is for salvage of the 2x12s and 2x4s, and the rest of it is firewood. The Forest Service would expect that the pumping station for gas be still available.
Taxi service
must be maintained into the wilderness area.
Has this been a private
yes.
community?
Yes, on Forest Service land, yes. Mm-hmm. The committee have any other, you want to say anything that I've missed along the way?
Is there any other questions or maybe input?
Yeah, anybody have any questions? Pardon?
We need a Jacob's wind charger.
Oh yeah, we need a Jacob's wind charger as a demonstration project. If any of you from the Midwest know of one of these that we can get put up on the tailings as part of our educational project.
That one just harnesses one of the unused hurricane or tornadoes or something?
No, this is an old-time one. What Fritz is referring to is Dr. Yen's proposal. He's at Grumman Aircraft, Long Island. Some of you probably have been followed this, and I know one of Bill Mathens just told me that one of his people in his company made this suggestion too. Is you if you can capture the wind and get it into a tornado, you can get a lot of power out of it. And one of the proposals that Yen has made is to, if you have a vertical chimney such as this, and with the prevailing winds, it would be down lake, down at Lucerne if you went down there, or up here, it usually comes down a valley, and you'd have slits in the side toward the wind in a chimney such as this. And then you'd have a propeller here. And on this kind of a situation, you can get some terrific, miniature whirlwinds in there. And then the additional proposal is that you have a black surface such as this to also capture solar heat, because it will also heat up the air to really increase the wind velocity. And you could also have a fire down below, burn your waste materials or wood or whatever it is. That'll even increase it more. And you'll have propellers in that'll be going pretty fast, generating electricity for you. And so that's, I think that's what Fritz is referring to, because I was telling him about it lately, because I was familiar with the Sandia proposal and their model they're building down the Albuquerque area to look at a different approach on utilization of wind. Because the windmills now, you know, aren't cost effective.
Leo, plus the fact that we oftentimes have faculty here that generate a lot of hot air.
We've never reached that velocity here, though. Although I see a sign on it now, so maybe something has happened since last I was here.
But sometimes we do see signs of a circular motion.
But it's interesting that this should come up, because this is the kind of system they're looking at. It just this is the design for it, but we have to do it outside.
Get open the windows and the doors.
Yeah. Yes.
Back to the property in Lucerne.
Yes.
If you should decide not to accept it, is there any danger that someone else would take it who would not cooperate with Bolden, make it difficult for the village?
Well, it depending on who the neighbor is. And in times past, of course, it was at one time proposed to if you could have some change in gambling laws and all, to have it sort of as a that was one proposal made quite a while ago. Now it's up at Ocean Shores in this state. And there are some enterprises that we'd rather not have there. So that would certainly, I suppose, be a consideration of the board.
But it's well to remember, of course, that the Forest Service is not about to let anyone in there except under their terms, basically.
What are their terms?
Well, the main thing right now is that it has to remain as a service to the public, not exclusively, but that has to be one of the aspects of Lucerne. That's the only justification they have of leasing property down there for any commercial use, is that it does serve the public. So I think other than that, they're wide open.
Yes.
Are there any estimates of what it would cost to develop it, where you really want it?
Well, it hasn't determined fully what we want. We're working on the sort of box one relative to what do you have to do to the power plant to make it operative? What do you do on a sewage system? What do you do on fire and safety to put in that kind of a system? We have not reached the stage of development as to far, you know, if you want a building this size. And
a gift of $50,000 would certainly help.
You're talking of a long-term lease, like 40, 99, or something like that, with a renewal?
Well, usually it's on a 10-year kind of a thing.
The Forest Service,
but we have to have a 10-year plan.
The Forest Service has a limit of 10-year leases now for any commercial-type lease, with a possibility of a 20-year lease if it's used for a bank financing. But they're very reluctant to go 20 years.
You're on just a 3 or a 4 up here.
10.
No, we're on 10.
You are at 10.
And it's up in 1982.
Okay. Mike, you said that there's a possibility of phasing in. You mentioned the question a moment ago.
Good point.
I think the first thing is that, and that the board's already authorized that some amount of money must be set aside, $2,000 or $3,000 for that, just to come up with a plan, a possible plan for consideration and submission to the Forest Service. Then after that, there will be the beginning implementation of it, and it probably would take 2, 3, 4 years to come into anywhere near a full program down there if we decide to go with it. And it wouldn't mean that we have to have a full-blown program and its implementation in terms of buildings and equipment and supports by the time we take it over, if we decide to take it over at all.
Well, like a possibility, like if you go, they would like to turn over, for example, the campgrounds, their own campgrounds too, and if you establish campgrounds, you see, well, that would be a rather modest investment if you went with a campground and maybe upgraded the moorage facilities.
I imagine one potential plan would be to try to eliminate the total use of hydrocarbons or gas or fuel, right? Mm-hmm. How do you propose to get people from Lucerne up to here? Using electricity generated in a car or something like that, or gondolas? I think it's a real practical problem because you got a 1,000 or 2,000 foot rise, you've got lots of people moving up and down, lots of supplies.
This we have devoted a good deal of time on speculation as to what we might do here. We have looked at the possibility of electrical generation for electric powered vehicles. We have looked and are looking at the possibility of methane generation of some sort in a vehicle. I know when I was in the big war in Africa, for example, they'd stoke up their old furnace in their vehicle, and they were methane producers, and off you'd run again. And we have to consider those. We're also looking at steam generation. Like Tom here, he's got a friend that's in the steam business, and we're looking at the possibilities. Should we get something like the African Crew Queen running up and down the lake, you see? Humphrey Bogart won't be here with us, but we can be...
We can whistle.
We can whistle, yeah. No, this is a very critical problem. You hit a very key issue.
One other question I have. Do you, by virtue of owning property on the other side, have access to half of the water coming down Railroad Creek, or at least through that area? Does your property go out to the middle of the creek?
No, they, as I understand it, in the state, well, I think in any state, but I know in this state, the state owns the water, even though the government owns the property, or even a private individual owns the property. And no individual has the right to water that is any, at least in the major rivers. I think in any river in the state of Washington, you have to get a permit from the Department of Ecology to take any water out of. It's complicated along here because Railroad Creek is designated as a major water source in the state of Washington. I think it's on the lower edge of the scale, but still there's enough volume in it so that it's a major water source. So the Department of Ecology, as well as, primarily the Department of Ecology, Shorelines Management Act, dictates what even private individuals can do within 200 feet of the shoreline. So private property doesn't mean too much in terms of the right to develop.
Yeah, warehouse found that out over on the plateau.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Any other suggestions, questions? Any of you can leave at any time. We'll be available here for any of you who want to come up and talk to us privately. We appreciate your attention and your continued interest, and we're always open to suggestion and hope that we serve the village well.
Can I make a comment before you?
Yes, sir.
I'm always impressed when olden people get together, and this is another of those occasions, and I'd like to sing the doxology when you think of the kind of service that is offered by dedicated people to have a contribution to the village and its life and to its future. And when these fellows come up a couple times or three times a year to get their brows and to bring and pool their experience in order to preserve this place that we think so much of and enjoy so much, we certainly owe them a debt of gratitude. Once again, Leo and members of the committee, we are all of us indebted to you for the kind of contribution that you've made with your deep and profound skills and your even deeper and more profound dedication to Holden. Thank you very much.
I want to say something in that regard. Some of those who are new here, that's Fritz Norstedt, who is a director. And he was here in 63, and following his visit here in 63, he was one of those who promoted the idea of having a scientific input to this place, and we finally got around to it in 75, and so now he's very excited about it. The other thing that I think it's very important to you to know, that we've talked a lot about decision-making here tonight. An important component of any decision-making, no matter where it is, but here very most important, has to do with the prayer input. And the decisions that I have to make, and I'm sure my committee, it is undergirded with prayer, not only from this village at intercessory prayer, and every week Werner leads the prayer group here, which of course is very important to us. And for myself, on these issues, when I ride my bike or walk to work, as I do every day, I consider these important issues and make them a great concern of me, for me, and it's on my card of requests. So I think it's important for you to know that.
Well, I'd like to make a little postscript remark if we're not too far away from it again on the decision making. pertains to, I think, your question. Dave discussed the business of how we make decisions. It seems to me we need to remember that it's always the people who make decisions. No machine can make a decision yet. So it's always people, and it seems to me, relating to this question of self-perpetuating boards or committees, that the people who are making the decisions have to have a stake in the decision. And I think we shouldn't forget that. We're seeing, obviously, if you look at the corporation, people run it from day to day and make the decisions, or the company officers. If they make bad ones, they're thrown out fairly soon by the stockholders, unless you work for Lockheed. Now we're seeing a trend, the board of directors, as a result of a number of things that have happened in the last few years, are now being required to have more legally inflicted responsibility. And this has always been the way in this country for many years for bank directors, who are personally responsible for negligence in the bank. I've been one for 7 years, and I feel that very strongly. And you can't afford the insurance to protect you. And doctors, they can carry insurance, but they have a stake in those decisions they make right on the table. So I think in all of these decisions, it's very easy to make a decision if you're not personally involved. And it doesn't matter which way it comes out. And I think that from what I see here in the board and the people involved, we have, and I think we need, people who feel that personal involvement.
Leo, I think it's also important for people to realize that the committee itself isn't making the decisions, or emphasize again that we're making recommendations to the full board who accept the seat, so that we're not the decision making.
All right. Thank you for tonight.